I'm kind of grateful for having all of the shit go wrong with the Grand Prix. I feel like I need to learn how to deal with adversity before I can actually reach the top and like figure that all out. And it's so easy to look at like Keegan and Sophia and be like, the top is so, like, you can sit at the top and it's a sustainable place to be and like you can be so consistent. But then it's such a good reminder that bike racing is hard.
Yeah.
And I think like all of those lessons have been so, so helpful.
It's showtime, everybody! Showtime!
You've been living in a dream world, Neo. Yeah. This is the world as it exists today.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.
Listen, we're talking about practice.
Hey, Pete, on the dude's rug.
Donnie, you're out of your element.
I see. You think this has nothing to do with you.
Don't ever trash talk Black Jesus.
This is the Adventure Stash with Payson McKelvin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. Really excited to bring you today's episode with three awesome women that are in the Grand Prix. Yes, in the previous two Women of the Grand Prix episodes, we've had four guests, but I realized I'm not very good at doing 10 to 15 minute interviews. They just turn into 15, 20, 25 minute interviews. And so the episodes have been getting pretty long. So we're just doing three this week. We have two women that are newer to the sport and then one veteran. Alexa Scarta has been racing for a good number of years now. In fact, she and I used to race together back in the collegiate days. She was on CMU when I was at Fort Lewis. She's a multi-time national champion. Bella Heiser and Anna Yamauchi, on the other hand, are pretty new to the sport, already finding success. But there's some fun other kind of parallels here in that Alexis and Bella both have side interests in music. Bella plays the guitar a lot. You can go check that out on her Instagram. And Alexis, kind of almost in secret, at least to me, and I think to many others in the sport, has been mixing electronic music for a while. And I was really excited to talk about this. I listen to electronic music when I'm training a lot, also driving, just listen to it a lot, period. And so I had her send me some of what she's been working on, and it's really good. I was really impressed. So we're including it, a little bit of it as a sample at the end of our interview. Big thanks to these women for giving us so much time today. We will keep these Women of the Grand Prix episodes rolling, but we're going to space them out a little bit, keep some diversity. Next week, we will have Leah Wilcox for a typical kind of long form interview. Just she'll be the only guest next week to talk about the upcoming Colorado Trail Race and also her recent Tour Divide experience. But before we dive into today's episode, I want to give a quick shout out. This isn't an ad. I just want to do it because I'm stoked on it to Durango Derby. Durango has a new bike race coming to town and I couldn't be more stoked. I've actually played a role in helping this thing happen. One of the reasons that I moved to Durango, 12 years ago now, was because of the incredible trail access and diversity. So Durango is one of the most geologically diverse places in the country, which means every trail system in town has a very distinctly different feel. One trail system that's a favorite has big granite boulders, pretty technical. Another one is more kind of like red rock and clay, almost feels like Moab in spots, and everything in between. Along with that, Durango has an incredible racing heritage. The first ever mountain bike world championships were held here in 1990, and just awesome, incredible grassroots scene, period. There's obviously a lot of pros that live here, but there's way more just people that are stoked on bikes and riding mountain bikes day in and day out. And so it seemed high time that we had an event that really celebrated that. And Durango Derby is going to do that. It's happening September 23rd, Saturday, September 23rd. And this first year is going to be run kind of enduro style. So there will be timed segments, but it is not an enduro. It's a cross-country race. You're pedaling hard on the way up and the way down. Each of the four stages, they vary in duration from 5 to 13 miles, happen in a different trail system, so you get lots of diversity, get a true feel of everything Durango has to offer in town. And then we all kind of slow roll together across town from one stage to the next. It's going to be really fun. You can do it as an individual. You can do it as a two-person team or four-person team. Sarah Sturm and I will be leading some fun group rides around the weekend, and there's just going to be a great time. Lots of local pros will be there. Hope to see you there. DurangoDerby.com. Okay, now for an official ad. I really want to thank Off-Piste Provisions for supporting today's episode. I've given these guys a shout out in a couple of previous episodes. They're an awesome New Zealand brand on a journey to create a thriving planet for all, and they make plant-based adventure snacks that are packed with protein. I eat meat. I love meat, but this is a plant-based jerky snack that is so good. I love it. I love beef jerky. I love plant-based jerky. I've now come to find out it's gluten-free, soy-free, 45% protein, great source of iron. And boy, especially in light, I don't know those of y'all that have, that saw that Oxford University study come out that really put some numbers to just how damaging the meat industry can be, not can be, is unequivocally on the environment. It's made me think hard about how much meat I eat. And Nicole and I are actually doing meatless Mondays now in an effort to cut back a little bit. And also whenever the opportunity presents itself, reaching for an alternative when it's a good alternative. And Off-Piste Provisions has an amazing alternative. I highly recommend you go check them out. You can get 30% off when you go to Amazon and use code all caps adventure30 at checkout. Off-Piste is OFFPISTE. Thank y'all so much for listening, and we'll catch you after the show. I also see that you have some music equipment in the background, which a little bird gave me a tip about a little side interest you have. We'll talk about later. I don't know if that's your equipment, but I just heard something.
I am at my dad's house, but so that's his equipment.
Gotcha. Okay, anyway, Alexis Garda, who I've known for quite a number of years. How many years ago would we have been racing collegiate? Like 12, 14?
12. Years are adding up. I think 12.
Time flies. I was talking to your teammate Keegan the other day, and I forget how he said it, but he was just like, "We're getting old." I was like, "Whatever, dude. Like, I have a year or two on you. You can shut up." But no, anyway, it is funny how time flies.
But yes, I know. It's crazy. I used to be one of the younger ones, you know. It's funny how you cross over and just kind of happens. You're like, "Oh, I'm actually now on this side of the spectrum."
Exactly. But on the flip side, that also means you have quite the resume. So multi-time collegiate national champion, marathon national champion, raced plenty of World Cups. I'm sure you went to World Champs at some point.
Yeah,
for
one
XU.
Year I did. Mm-hmm. Yep. And yep. In Cairns.
Mm-hmm. What else would you throw into your background of race experience? Favorite Ooh. Experiences or results?
I don't know. I think those are the big ones for sure.
Some epic rides, podiums. Did you ever win the Grand Junction Off-Road?
Yes. Yes. And I won it this year.
The Rides and Vibes. Nice.
Yes. Rides and Vibes now, but same course.
Hometown race.
I've never, I guess, won the Grand Junction Off-Road technically. But Whiskey 50, I won that one last year. So that was a big one.
That is a big one.
Yeah, I really like those ones. That's probably my favorite style right now, are the kind of epic ride length mountain bike events.
Yep. But now you're a gravel racer.
Now that's, yes. Part of my image is now. Gravel,
oh,
I guess.
Oh, man. I had someone leave a comment on my Instagram the other day that literally said, "I did not know you raced mountain bikes." And I was just like, oh, just dagger.
Are you kidding me?
Dagger to the heart. Wow. I know. Which I think is somewhat indicative of like how many new fans are coming to the sport in the last couple of years. But also I was just like, oh man, that hurts so bad.
That's interesting.
But anyway, how are you feeling about this year? This is your second year doing the Grand Prix. Very different style racing than really any of us have been used to over the last, you know, decade or so, for those of us that have been doing it the last decade, mostly coming from a mountain bike background. What's your 2 years in? What are your thoughts on this mix of endurance racing that somehow kind of comes from all of these different angles and disciplines and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, you know, I think my mentality has always been like, just go with it. Whatever is happening, just kind of see where it goes, I guess. I started out wanting to be a cross country I started out wanting to be a runner and got injured a lot and then fell into mountain biking and then wanted to be a cross country mountain biker and then started doing the epic ride stuff. And I was like, this is so long. And then the lifetime stuff popped up and that made epic rides seem really short, which is, it's funny. Things just keep getting longer. And I think the more I'm doing it, the more I'm starting to appreciate it and like it. And I love that we have this opportunity to do something that people are interested in. I'm still figuring it out, I think. Like, these longer events, it requires a lot more, you can't just go out and hammer. You need to focus on nutrition and think about all the little details, which has not always been my strong suit. So it's probably good for me as an all-around bike racer to do this kind of stuff. It's been challenging.
Yeah. Do you find yourself, just enjoyment-wise, gravitating more towards the mountain bike events in the Grand Prix at this point still, or have you enjoyed kind of like the massive challenge that Unbound presents, for example?
I think I still am definitely gravitating towards mountain biking, and in fact it makes me kind of appreciate mountain biking more. I've realized how much I enjoy descending and being on single track. Like, it's just kind of nice when you're on a climb on a mountain bike to have something to look forward to, just get to the top of this climb and it's going to be really fun. Whereas in gravel racing, it's a lot like road racing in that you just have to keep pushing it the whole time and just find a rhythm and focus on all the tactics.
Yeah, for sure. So I know you had a pretty tough Unbound and despite that, you're sitting really comfortably inside the top 10 in the Grand Prix standings. You had a solid crusher and just absolutely smashed Sea Otter, which kind of reflects what you were just saying about enjoying mountain biking. But I am curious about your Unbound experience, because that can be, such a meat grinder of an event, obviously, and you were doing well and got really far into the race and then just had some bad luck, as I think I remember, and had to pull out like frustratingly close to the finish, I think. And I mean, if you want to talk about the race itself and what happened, great, but I'm almost more curious just about how it's been, getting back on track and bouncing back from that, because you have so many years of experience. Like, obviously, you'll have had plenty of ups and downs throughout your career, and I'm just kind of curious how you went through that process of like dealing with the disappointment and then moving on and getting back on track, since there's obviously so much season left.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Making a decision to pull out of a race is like the hardest decision I think a racer can make. It is like, it just hurts so much mentally. And then honestly, more so after the race, it hurts even more. it was kind of hard to come back from that, honestly. Like, I've never pulled out of a race before and I didn't think it would affect me as much as it did. At that point of the race, I was just in so much discomfort. My back was hurting really bad and it was getting hot and I was like just starting to feel all sorts of weird heat issues. And in any other race, I would have just pushed through it, but Unbound is so long that it can really have effects long afterwards. And I already knew that this was going to be a drop race where I was. A lot of women had passed me because my back was hurting, so I had to slow down and realized I wasn't in a good position anymore. And I kind of just didn't have any motivation because I had finished Unbound last year. It wasn't really a goal to ride 200 miles. I wanted to do well and then focus on the next race. And I wasn't sure what was going on with my back. I didn't want to screw anything else up for the next races. And it just seemed like the smartest decision at the time to pull out and focus on the next race. But honestly, training though, I felt like I almost had a little bit of a mental wall, if you want to call it that. Like,
afterward, you mean?
Yeah, afterwards, during training and stuff, I noticed I was like, it just was still in the back of my head that I pulled out of a race. And so it took me a little bit of time to kind of move past that. And then, had a couple other rougher races for me, I would say. My legs just weren't there. Crusher wasn't what I was hoping for. My legs just couldn't push the power that I was hoping to. And so I was really glad that we had Downeyville after Crusher. I really felt like it put me back into a good mental space, and I'm excited to race Leadville. And so hoping things kind of turn around from here.
Yeah. Yeah. The reason I asked that is not so much to put you through like reliving those frustrations, but more because I know like you've been so consistent for so long, and I know there's a lot of younger racers, probably especially in your own field, that look up to you. And probably like, if you look at your, for example, if you look at your results from last year, from the Grand Prix last year, you were fifth overall, and you were third, fifth, second, and third in four of your five big races. And so I think a lot of the younger racers probably see that and they're just like, oh my God, how does she do that? You know, all of these races are so different. And I think it's probably good for other athletes to hear that, like, yeah, even the top riders in this field have bad luck, go through hard periods, go through tough mental stuff. Even the best riders go through that sort of thing. And I think it's good to talk about that too.
Definitely. Yeah.
That said, I know you've been hard at work for Leadville. You had a solid ride there last year. What's your top finish there historically so far?
Did I get fifth place there last year?
Yeah, I think so.
Last year was the first time I've done it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Fair. And it was kind of funny because I had a really good first half. I was in the lead and winning by, I think, quite a bit. But I think I went out a little too hard and my stomach was not cooperating at the high altitudes. I wasn't able to digest anything. I tried taking gels and it just like sat in my stomach and I couldn't digest them. So I don't even think I utilized that energy. And then I couldn't eat anything because I felt like I was going to throw up. And so I didn't eat enough after that. And I eventually just blew up. But luckily that happened, I think, like halfway through. So I was able to hobble my way to the finish. Losing too much, but I'm hoping to improve the nutrition and all that this year.
Yep, for sure. So Leadville is obviously one of the ones that people traditionally kind of put the most emphasis on, just because along with Unbound, it's sort of one of, I'd say, the two biggest races that we have here in the States. That said, you know, obviously you were, before we started recording, you were talking about how you were going up to higher altitude at Leadville to train, then you'd kind of come back down to a little bit lower elevation in Boulder to get a little bit more power oriented training in. But even though like you're really, and we can talk about more about Leadville too, if you want, but I'm also curious just kind of how you're balancing the year as a whole, because you mentioned Downeyville, and like that was this really refreshing, you know, fun mountain bike oriented, obviously very famous mountain bike race. How are you finding, like, with the Grand Prix taking so much real estate these days on the race calendar, and then also sponsors putting so much emphasis on it, all that sort of thing, how are you personally finding balance with your schedule and training and your relationship with the bike so that it feels sustainable? Because obviously it still has to be fun to an extent.
Yeah, I think we've definitely put a focus on Lifetime, and those are our like A races. And we've put in some fun races in between. A lot of it, like Whiskey, was really fun. Downeyville obviously is amazing. And I think just, you know, realizing that it's a really long season and most of our big races are actually like later on in the season, to really just kind of be consistent and, just, it's hard to be strong towards the end of the season. And so really focus on, I guess, not putting too much in the middle and having like energy and, I don't know, mentally and physically ability to like be able to perform towards the end of the season.
For sure. For sure. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, but we have to talk about it. So your teammates with Keegan and Tobin Ortenblad, who are obviously two successful racers in their own right, and also I know pretty fun-loving guys, especially when they're together.
Yes.
What has it been like to be teammates with them? Like, do you feel like you always have to be kind of on defense and like carving out some space for yourself as the as the only woman on the team, or do they kind of help bring sort of a lighthearted attitude and make this long season, you know, mix it up a little bit, like with your time off the bike? What is that dynamic like? The team dynamic.
Yeah, it is kind of a funny dynamic because those guys are a riot. I don't know, they're pretty funny. They're definitely fun to be around, and they kind of get lost in their own little world, and I feel like I'm kind of in the background just watching and just like, I'm here, I'm kind of a part of it, but sometimes I'm like, I don't know, a wallflower a little bit. So I try sometimes to be like, I need to make sure I'm seen and heard, but for the most part, I kind of am like, I feel like doing my own thing. And yeah, I guess that's kind of, I think we have things like figured out. We all work pretty well together and understand each other. And it's a lot of fun. It's actually a really fun team.
Yeah.
We have a lot of fun together for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely the
serious at the same time. It's like a balance, but
yeah. Yeah, that's the impression I get from the outside for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting too, because a lot of the athletes obviously that are doing these races these days are more kind of on the privateer track. And so as part of this Santa Cruz Hit Squad, you're on one of the only like actual factory style teams, which obviously is a very different dynamic. So
yeah, I really like being on a team. I don't know. It gives me more of a sense of purpose. Like I feel like I'm riding for a team, and it's just nice to have people around, and yeah, it's cool. We're all going through the same thing, and it's just nice to have that like camaraderie a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of training, which I know you're doing a lot of right now, I forget who it was, but I was chatting with someone and they mentioned that you make your own electronic music. And I'm super curious about this. How you do it, how you developed an interest, how much time you actually spend doing it, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of a funny and kind of random little hobby that I have, and I've just always done it. My dad, he's big into music, and so I think I just sort of always had that as part of my life. And he likes to record music and has his own stuff that he uses. And I think it was in high school, I started using his digital audio workstation, and I had a little piano, and I started like recording some stuff and making music. And I've always just kind of enjoyed like just randomly getting on a piano and just seeing what happens. And yeah, it just kind of developed from there, and I've just created electronic music on and off since high school. There's been a lot of phases where there were years where I wouldn't do it at all, and then I would take it up again. And in the recent like past 3 years, I've been doing a lot of it and spending probably too much time doing it. it's something I just really like, enjoy doing. And yeah, especially, you know, it takes my mind out of racing and bikes. It's just a nice thing to have for balance in life, and gives me something to do, like gives me like an outlet when I need to have recovery, like so I don't go out and run around and spend a lot of energy. I can actually use my recovery day and like get lost in music and stuff like that. So
yeah, cool.
It's just nice to have.
Yeah. I assume your dad has plays some role kind of in the creative process and just like inspiration, but do you have any other sources of inspiration or artists or styles that you take to your own creations?
I definitely have artists that I look up to and learn from, like, and it changes all the time, but like kind of that Clozy, Odessa, or Fredegan, Skrillex, and that kind of stuff. Fortet's awesome. Bonobo. Yeah, so there's a lot of different artists I really look up to and kind of like base music off of. So
nice.
But my dad, I've always looked up to my dad too, and that's how I got into sports actually. He was a runner, and I would see him like running on the treadmill, and I would run circles around him, and so I think just looking up to him too, I just fell in love with sports and music. So
cool. What do you use to actually make the music? Do you use, is it Ableton is one of them?
I do use Ableton.
Yeah.
And so how do you know about Ableton? Just curious.
So this would have been collegiate time actually. Uh-huh. And it's funny if we'd known this about each other, we could have talked about it back then even. But so at the time, Howard was actually really into mixing music.
Oh.
And as a good friend of mine, some of that rubbed off on me. And so I like very slightly dabbled in it.
Dang.
But mostly, that's so cool. Yeah, but mostly I would just listen to what Howard was making. He used to have a SoundCloud called DJ How Hard. I tried to find it the other day and I couldn't find it anymore, but.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea. And he doesn't do this anymore?
No, but he would do all kinds of stuff. Like he would take, one of the most amazing things he did is he found a bunch of Lord of the Rings sound bites, samples, mm-hmm. and just like somehow worked them into these crazy loops. But anyway, that's how I know it. I know, me too. That's what I know. How I know what Ableton is.
Okay.
Do you make any of it public?
I don't really have anything public right now. Have you heard of like the Ableton Push? That's the control that I've been using, and I've just been learning more about that, and kind of just learning a lot right now, and it would be fun to do more with that and share more, so maybe in the future.
Cool. Yeah. So do you listen when you're training? What percentage of your stuff versus someone else are you listening to?
Oh man, I get so sick of my stuff, but I'll listen to it to see how it sounds on headphones and get like test the quality of the audio and stuff like that, and then listen to other music just to see how it compares. But no, I usually just listen to other stuff.
Nice. Does your dad like your music?
You know, it's funny. I think he respects it, but he likes to play, you know, classic rock and play guitars and sing. And I think electronic music is a very different genre. I'm not really sure how much that generation really understands electronic music. So mm-hmm. He says he likes it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you find the time to go to shows, or are you mostly just listening and mixing yourself?
Mostly just listening and mixing, although I did go to my first like electronic show in December, Decadence in Denver. And that was a unique experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. Not a bike racer crowd.
It's a very different crowd, but that's why it was cool. I was like, this is something very different. And it was just fun to see it and be a part of it. So
nice.
Yeah.
That's so cool. That's fun. I'm actually in the middle of trying to license a closey song for a little film we're working on.
Do you know the title?
Red Forest, if you know that.
Oh, cool.
One.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I don't know it by name, but.
Yeah, it's awesome. A fun, just sort of like, I don't know, more chill.
I love the style. It's like that tribal kind of sound. It's cool.
I know. It's unreal. I mean, it's so many of her songs, I feel like they feel classic somehow, even though they're relatively recent. They just feel automatically like anthem-y, like right off the bat, like you've heard them for 5 years.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. They're just epic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. So what would we have to do to convince you to get a little sample that we could like pair with this bit of the interview? Are you shy about your music, or?
No, I could probably get you a song. Sure.
Yes. Oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, well, just remember you asked for it, so sorry in advance. If
the thing here, though, you're going to be getting Instagram messages from people now just asking for your music to make it more public.
Yeah, well, hopefully. If people like it anyway. But again, yeah, it's just, I don't know, random and fun, and I like it. So
I just think it's so cool that, because there's plenty of racers who have side interests. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to pull off, like, especially when you're doing it full time and all of the different races are so diverse at this point and scattered all over the country. Like, actually getting good at a secondary thing is a big ask. So I always get really interested when someone is dedicated to something else.
No, it is interesting because sometimes I get pulled out too much out of training and I'll stay up too late working on music and my focus just gets lost in it sometimes. So yeah, it is. It's a weird balancing act. Sometimes it's a good thing to have something different and sometimes it's distracting. So
is there a time that comes to mind where just getting sucked down the rabbit hole of mixing music was the biggest problem, whether for a training ride or like night before a race or something?
There's been a lot of training rides definitely that I've prioritized. Don't tell my coach Allison. Where I'm like stay up till 4 or 5 in the morning.
Whoa. That's awesome. I love it.
I'm just like, what happened?
Yeah.
I get sucked in a portal. I don't know. It just happens sometimes.
No, that's cool. You can't turn off creativity sometimes. Love that. Okay, Alexis. Anything else? Any thoughts on the Grand Prix, Leadville? Appreciate you taking the time to catch up a little.
Yeah, just thinking about that. No, I'm excited for Leadville. I think it wasn't like the best race last year, but I think it's one of my favorites. And gosh. Yeah, we've got a lot coming up next September. There's like a race every single weekend, so or this September. So that'll be interesting. But
oh yeah, I did have one other thought that reminds me. Gravel Nationals. Mm-hmm. Are you doing it?
Yeah, definitely. We're all planning on going on the Hit Squad, and yeah, I'm really excited about it. It'll be interesting. Yep. How about you?
I don't know. I'm on the fence because it feels. Mm-hmm. Crazy to skip because obviously it's going to be a really big event, but also adding a fourth race weekend to September just feels a little insane, especially when it's like 4 September races, weekend off if you're not doing Gravel Worlds, and then doubleheader in Bentonville. It's a lot, but
it's insane.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, well, good luck in Leadville. I'll see you next week, and I'm going to pester you about music.
Okay, well, sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Bella Heiser. You go by Bella, right?
I do, yeah.
Are you in Brevard this time of year?
I am, yeah. So actually just at the beginning of the season, like March-ish, I guess, beginning of our season, made the jump from Huntsville, Alabama to Brevard to be closer to, you know, Carson Beckett and some better training buddies, so.
Uh-huh. Cool. Are you going to school there?
The plan is to start some community college courses coming fall, but I took a gap year, and then I took basically another gap year. So I finished high school a year early. So I got away with two gap years.
Nice. And so you're 19, yeah. Right?
I am, yeah.
Yep. Youngest in the Grand Prix.
Ian Lopez will get mad at you if you say that.
Oh, is he younger?
He's 11 days younger than me.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
That's close. Youngest in the women's field.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the moment that you found out you were going to be doing the Grand Prix this year.
Well, so I applied last year and I didn't get in. And I applied again because I got some more endurance under my belt. And I just didn't think it was going to happen again. I was ready to do another XC season. I was actually at training camp and I got a text from Dylan Johnson's girlfriend, and I had just gotten back into like service after being out riding all day, and my phone was just exploding. Like people like, called me, they were texting me. I was tagged in a million things and I was like, no way I got in. Like, this is so crazy. I didn't think I was going to get in. And I was just stoked. I couldn't stop riding my bike. I was like riding around the parking lot in circles telling everyone.
That is awesome. Started extra training right then and there.
Oh, yeah. It was convenient to be at training camp. That really gave me a boost for the next couple of days.
Yeah. So what do you think were some results the previous year that helped you get the nod for this year?
You know, I'm not sure, but I did win Belgian Waffle U23 at the Asheville race. Uh-huh. And then I also did Schwamigan. I finished last place in that, I believe. But I think being there might have been a ticket to that.
Showed some commitment to the events. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about your interest in the Grand Prix because, I mean, obviously we're seeing younger riders do it. But a lot of younger U23 riders such as yourself that come from more of a mountain bike background have World Cup racing dreams and, you know, pursue that trajectory more commonly.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about your interest in the Grand Prix and why you decided you wanted to try to do this ultra, it's not ultra endurance, but wide spectrum of endurance events rather than more traditional XCO?
Yeah, so it kind of goes back to 2020 when all the racing was shut down. Like, I decided to just start riding my bike as much as possible every week. And it was like, if I don't do 200 miles this week, I'm not satisfied. And so I just kind of started ramping it up more and more. And at the end of the year, we got this race called Fool's Gold presented by Mountain Goat Adventures. It's a local race to Georgia. Mm-hmm. And it's a 60-mile mountain bike race. And I did it, and I was like, that was so awesome. But then XCO opened up again. And so I went for two more XCO seasons before I kind of realized I wasn't super stoked doing that kind of racing. And I revisited some endurance gravel, some endurance mountain bike with Fool's Gold again, and actually did really well in those races. And I was kind of like, my body seems to enjoy this style of training and racing more. And I seem to be happier on the bike just riding and training like this. Let's see what happens. So that's why I applied, and like getting in was like the best thing ever. This has been the happiest I've been during a season in a long time. So.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really good to hear. Do you think that's because of just like the day-to-day process kind of fitting what you want to do more, or the community is different? Why do you think it's been your happiest season?
I get to ride my bike as much as I want, and it's been awesome. And there's not a lot of structure. I mean, there's structure, but there's not a lot of structure. It's basically just like go out into the woods for 4 hours and ride your bike, which is just, it's just my favorite thing. And but I guess the community as well is a lot more relaxed, even at a race like Unbound, where it's so stressful to try and figure out your nutrition and stuff. Everyone's still just like good timing, like chatting. Everyone's at the venue hanging out. Where, you know, going back to Nationals a couple weeks ago, it was like, it was really stressful because everyone was stressed out about lines and race starts and like, it's just more enjoyable for me.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm not going to name her, but I have a friend who is a very good XCO racer. And she said that in the last 2 years, she hasn't done a ride over 3.5 hours in training. Like, that's her longest training ride. I was just like, what? I would go crazy. Like, I would be going off script of my training plan constantly.
Yeah, I couldn't do that. Yeah, I get to like an hour in, and if it's like an easy hour ride, I'm like, oh, man, I want to ride more.
That's cool. So what has it been like adapting to these longer events? Because, I mean, soul riding is all well and good, but some of these lifetime Grand Prix events are just absolute destroyers. You know, there's the obvious ones like Unbound, but even something on the shorter side, like Crusher, or I guess Sea Otter's kind of right in the middle, like they're just absolute like body destruction, you know, like vision quests of races.
Yeah. Sea Otter was a true slap in the face, a little bit of like, I still am very much racing like an XCO racer, like going way too hard in the first hour and a half, because I was passing some people at the start of Sea Otter that I should not have been passing, and they passed me back towards the later parts of the race like I was standing still, and I was like, oh, okay, I need to really learn how to like pace these races differently. So that's definitely been challenging.
What has training looked like for you? Because you're coming from more of a cross-country background. How have you adjusted training? Like, how big a difference are we talking volume-wise? Or, you know, say your longest ride before Unbound. What did that look like? Because I'm just thinking back to when I was 19. And believe it or not, I did my first century, as we used to call it. I feel like people don't use that term anymore because, like, 100-mile rides are child's play nowadays, but I did my first 100-mile ride when I was 19. And to think about someone like you, or, you know, you mentioned Ian earlier, that are training for races that are double that is pretty crazy. And, you know, it's no secret that like with miles in the legs, you kind of get a greater capacity to handle big rides and high training volume and all that sort of thing. It's not like more of a skill-oriented sport where you see like 17 or 18-year-olds like at the very, very top and the best they're going to be. A lot of times endurance athletes, it seems like especially on the women's side, like the peak comes quite a bit later than other sports. So I'm curious how you and your coach have kind of transitioned you in as a younger rider to bigger volume.
Yeah. So Joseph and I, pretty much Joseph Dabbs is my coach. I've been working with him since I think late 2020, and we're just like best friends. Like I can call him anytime and just chat for it. I have to like carve out like an hour in my day to talk to him because we get off topic pretty quickly. But yeah, Joseph, he just kind of started piling on the hours, just long rides, just getting used to the feeling of eating and drinking and just sitting on the saddle for that long. So I think we just started incorporating multiple 3-hour rides a week. And then on the weekends we would do like between 4 and 6 hour rides, just to get used to that saddle time really. And, we did a lot of, in the early season, we were doing a lot of 10-minute like sub threshold workouts. So that was like there to get the power up, but really it was just getting the engine ready to go that long.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of going long, talk to me about Unbound. What was that experience like?
Oh my gosh. So we stayed with Allison. I don't know how to say her last name right. I think it's Tetrick.
Yep.
I was talking to her. I was like, I think I got this. I think if I nail X, Y, and Z and like do this right. And she just kind of laughed at me. She's like, oh, honey, It's not that simple.
Yeah.
And I got out there and I quickly realized that it's not that simple. I did the first aid station. It took me like almost 3 hours to get there with all of that mud.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like 10 miles past that first aid station at like mile almost 90. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not even halfway there yet. And I kind of had a moment of like panic where I'm going to be honest. I called my mom who was at the aid station. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. And she was like, you can do it. I was like, I'm calling you looking for a reason to quit. And she's like, I'm not going to give you one. So just keep going. Like she wasn't about to let me quit. And my coach, I also called him. He was not about to let me quit. So it was good to just like hear that and be like, you're fine. Just take a deep breath. And like, it was more of a mental thing at that point. It wasn't even like a physical. So it was just pushing past that mental barrier of I have 105 more miles to ride.
Yeah.
That was something that I've never had to overcome before. But once I did, it was like, it was very peaceful, like finishing that race.
Almost. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what would, this is sort of a funny hypothetical question, but I feel like a lot of riders that have done a really long, hard race like Unbound will be able to relate. In hindsight, what do you think finish line Bella would have told 90 mile Bella during Unbound?
There's pizza at the finish. No, probably it. Well, it's what my coach told me when we were racing the Belgian Waffle. That was the longest race I had done prior to that. It was 130. And he was like, well, do you want to wake up in the morning and have finished this race and feel accomplished? Or do you want to wake up in the morning and have to wait a whole another year of sitting here and thinking about not finishing? And that's what really stuck with me, is what I kept telling myself is like, you're going to wake up tomorrow and have ridden 200 miles. And that's pretty badass.
Yeah. 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 Pain is temporary. Quitting lasts forever. That's something I've definitely used before. All that said, I know it left a pretty big dent for you. Can you talk a little bit about what you're sorting through now? I know you tried to make a ambitious pivot to XC for nationals because it's in your neck of the woods. And you have a lot of friends and family in that area. So you skipped Crusher with XCO Nats in mind. Can you talk a little bit about where things are at right now for your season and getting back into the groove of the Grand Prix?
Yeah, so I skipped Crusher, as you said. And at Nationals, I was just dealing with a lot of, I think, post-Unbound fatigue that I hadn't realized was there. I took like a solid week off after Unbound and then kind of jumped right back into things to get some intensity up trying to race XCO. And the very first practice day, I ended up with some severe cramping in my right leg that just persisted through the week. And I didn't DNF, but I only made it one lap, and I got pulled after one lap because I was just like soft pedaling to the finish line. And then after that, proceeded some headaches. And then now I got some blood work done to kind of figure out what's been going on. And it turns out I have really high iron, and a high white blood cell count, which basically indicates that I'm fighting some sort of illness. And then the iron was, I took too many supplements and am kind of, it's backfiring on me and making it harder for my body to process all of it. So we're kind of working on overcoming that.
Gotcha. Are you going to head to Leadville or kind of keep rebuilding?
That's kind of up in the air right now. I don't want to go to Leadville and overdo it. Obviously, going from not feeling super awesome to almost 13,000 feet of racing might not be a good idea. So I'm just going to kind of see how I'm feeling. I donated blood today to kind of alleviate some of the extra iron in my body. And I started working with Pure Clean Performance to get the correct supplements to balance me back out. Seems to be working. I feel much better today than I did yesterday and then the day before. So
good. Yeah. Yeah, boy, these season long series are just such a roller coaster. Like, it's such a journey. And I feel like we all do, you know, months and months of really focused training with all kinds of starry eyed ambitions. And then already by the first or second round, you're just like, oh man, this is going to be a saga for like 7 months.
Yeah, I know. I was at Nationals. Everyone was like finishing their races. Like, it's time to party. You know, we're done with our season. And I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of time left to be racing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of other events and events in your area, you said you're from Huntsville and Marathon Nationals are in Alabama this year. Do you have your eye on Marathon Nats?
I do, yeah. So it's in Auburn, Alabama, which is 3 hours from where I was living. Mm-hmm. And it is where we used to have a NICA race, one of our big NICA races down there at Chewaukla State Park. So I'm fairly familiar with those trails and definitely going to go down there and see what I can do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's killing me, but I have a race conflict. We have an awesome new race in Durango that I'm going to be attending called Durango Derby. But I'm very curious about the new Marathon Nats course. What's the terrain like? Because I can't really find a whole lot of info online yet.
So Chewaukla is very tight, very twisty. It's not super technical, but there's a lot of those like little routes that cross the trail that kind of suck up your speed. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely going to be very taxing on the low back and the hamstrings, and definitely going to be getting tired and wanting to really watch your line, even though it's not super technical. Yeah. Not to mention, it's probably going to be about 9,000 degrees.
Yeah. Much climbing or fairly flat?
There's some rolling climbing, but it's not terrible.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And do you know how long it's going to be?
I actually don't. I have a teammate that lives down there and he knows the course. So he's been practicing it. He's going to have the home turf advantage for sure.
Nice.
But I'll have to get in touch with him and get the specifics on the course.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really curious. One of the first, I think it was the first year I did Marathon Nats. I think it might've been like 2014, maybe even a little earlier, but it was also in Alabama.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. And,
what part?
Columbia County, I think.
Okay. I'm not exactly sure where that is, but it's interesting. Yeah.
Anyway, I could look it up for you, but I just remember it was this like 62 mile, you know, 100 degrees, 95% humidity, mm-hmm. just absolute death march. It was like over 5 hours. It was like, oh, it's flat, you know, it's pretty twisty, like there's plenty of time to rest. And then the gaps, it was like 15 minutes between everybody. It was so deceptively hard. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what it looks like this year.
That's kind of how Maryland was last year.
Yeah.
It was like, it was just so brutal. Like, I have axis shifting and I couldn't even, like, it was so technical that I could, like, I was hitting it with the palm of my hand trying to shift.
Yeah, so rocky, that one. Yeah.
It's like worse going downhill than it was going uphill.
Yeah, totally. Okay, last thing that I heard about you is that you're pretty handy with a guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how that interest came about and how long you've been doing it?
Yeah, so every year around Easter, my family would do Lent, and so we would give up TV is usually what we would do. So, uh-huh. like, hardly any screen time for however many weeks Lent is. And I had my grandparents visiting 1 year and I had this guitar that I never played. And my grandfather was like, let's learn guitar. So we sat down and we learned like 3 chords. And since then it's like my Zen time. I sit down. I was actually doing it right before I got on the call with you. I just learn little songs, little riffs, whatever, just kind of very peaceful, relaxing off the bike activity.
Yeah, cool. What's the song you're working on right now?
I was playing Jolene by Dolly Parton, actually.
Nice. Yeah, awesome.
I put it on my story. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a true, true Southerner. I love it.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, that's interesting, too, because, I mean, you have two pastimes, bike riding and playing the guitar, that are both, you know, fairly, they can be very like therapeutic, introspective, time consuming things. I'm going to sound like an old person right now, but based on a lot of 19-year-olds, it sounds like you have two really healthy outlets and don't have a whole lot of time to be on screens, whether it's Lent or not. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I definitely do go down the TikTok rabbit hole every mm-hmm. once in a while. I'm not going to lie, but I try not to.
Yeah. Good for you. Okay. Since you mentioned TikTok, this is good. you're of the age group where you're an expert, I assume. What are some, give us a little state of the union of TikTok right now. What are some like trending things that those of us that are in our late 20s, early 30s are just going to not be aware of?
Oh man, I don't even know. Like my TikTok, like it like caters exactly what you like are interested in. So yeah. Mine is like outdoorsy, like granola, like outfits, and people do like fit checks. So they'll like yep. show you like how they're putting together their outfit, which is something I like. And then I don't know, I'm really into this band called Greta Van Fleet, and so it yeah. shows me like
hell video. Yeah.
It shows me like videos of their concerts and stuff all the time. So I'm just like watching little snippets of concerts. And I think, and there's always like some sort of dance, but I can't dance. So I like scroll past them. Yeah.
Greta Van Fleet is awesome.
That's yeah. Great. I just went to their opening show for their new tour.
No way.
Yeah. It was cool. Rad.
Yeah. Good yeah. stuff. Do you have any other favorite artists?
Grateful Dead. If you're around me for any amount of time, you'll notice I have a Dancing Bear sticker on my helmet and on my phone
oh,
and
wow.
on my bike. Someone sent me a sticker packet, so I had to put it out there. And then I really like Hozier. He's Irish,
okay.
maybe. He's got like a really cool folky deep voice sound. And then pretty much just any jam bands, rock, Led Zeppelin.
Right on.
You can see music shrine.
Yeah, see what I'm starting to pick up here, Bella, is that like you're newer to this whole Grand Prix thing. You don't have as much race experience as some of the, you know, really established pros, but you can teach a lot of us nerdy like longtime racers, maybe how to be a little more up with the times and bring a little like youthful cool factor and pop culture. That could be your that could be a contribution. No yeah. pressure. I'm just saying you no definitely pressure. You're gonna have some unique insight, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. People tell me that I have a dad music taste, so I don't know.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I feel like Greta Van Vliet is definitely big with the dads that think they're cool right now, for sure.
For sure.
All right, Bella, thank you. This was fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Payson. It was really good chatting with you.
Yeah. Where can people follow you?
I have Instagram and then I have TikTok. So that's pretty much all I'm doing right now. I'm on Facebook, but I hardly ever post on there. So Instagram yeah. is kind of my main thing.
Yep. And IG, I think, is BellaHeiser17. What's your TikTok? Correct.
It's IzzyHyper17. So
sweet.
Hyper, HYPER. It's like yeah. Heiser.
Thanks, Bella. That was fun.
All right. Thank you, Payson.
Oh yeah, I might bail on the headphones already. I hate like the
you hate
feedback
it?
Of my voice. I
really?
Hate hearing my voice.
Okay, let's bail.
We thank
sound,
you.
We sound checked. That's so funny. You were like, I'm gonna bail.
I'm still like so not used to hearing my voice.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just.
Yeah. You've had a steep curve of mm-hmm. discovery with this.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Anna Yamauchi.
Is that Yamauchi. Hey?
Really?
Yeah.
I'm so glad we got that out of the way right at the start. How many people get that right?
I would say it's like a 50-50, maybe even okay. lower.
Yeah.
Because it's so phonetic. It's like Yamauchi, but yeah. if you look at it, it's a little intimidating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. I mean, less than 50% of people get my last name right, yeah. so I feel your pain. Here in Durango.
Yeah.
How long have you been in town?
I've been here for just over a week.
Nice. Yeah. And you'll be here through Leadville?
I'll leave next week for Leadville on like Tuesday. Yeah. So
and then
a good 2 weeks in Durango.
Steamboat after or?
No, I'm heading to Europe on Monday. So it's a quick turnaround. Yeah.
Dang. Nice. Cool. This isn't your first time to Durango, is it?
No, I've been here 3 other times now. This is definitely like the longest time I'll be in Durango so far.
Yep.
It's so nice actually being able to explore all the trails and like feel familiar.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been good so far.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just graduated.
Mm-hmm.
Architectural engineering, which I'd love to talk about. But I'm trying to remember back to when I first graduated college and just sort of like what it felt like. Because you're actually in a kind of similar place to where I was, where I thought I wanted to be a pro cyclist, but I wasn't positive that it was going to be the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you sort of dabbled in getting a real job mm-hmm. in your area of study recently. But you're also, you know, diving headlong into like multiple styles of racing simultaneously. What are you feeling right now? Can you tell up from down? Does it just sort of feel like really dynamic and exciting or overwhelming? Yeah,
I feel like I've been overwhelmed, but also then I go back to my senses and I'm like, this isn't that crazy, just like one step at a time. So yeah, I dabbled in the job thing, had a job for like 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. I was like, this doesn't feel right. So shifted paths. And I think it's so special that I have like so many opportunities right now and I can lean into the bike racing thing right now, which is kind of what I've decided to do. And that's a little fresh in like the past week and a half.
Yep.
And it's feels good. It feels a little scary, but it feels right. So
yeah. Tell me about why the job didn't feel right.
I guess I will be on the road until basically maybe the end of the Lifetime Grand Prix, which is like October 21st. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if I have the opportunity to dive into all this racing, which is like, it's the first time I've done this and had a season so long. Last year, I like put my bike away mid-July and went to South America for like a month. So this season feels a bit different,
mm-hmm.
but having the opportunity to be a bike racer full on and like see what it feels like, I was like kind of a no-brainer to put pause on the whole job thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I remember I read in an interview you did, I think it was with, Outside? Velo? One and the same?
Outside?
A couple months ago?
Was it?
Where basically...
Was it Betsy's article?
Potentially.
Okay. Yeah.
At one point you basically were talking about how you thought the ideal scenario for you was high-level bike racer, mm-hmm. but not having it be your only thing, and also working part-time, having something else that mm-hmm. is fulfilling. Do you feel like that's shifted based on that quick dabble in the job?
I still think I need to apply energy elsewhere other than just bike racing, because I don't want it to ever feel like a job and kind of take away like the novelty and like exciting factor of it. But if I could spend that free time like surfing and skiing versus trying to make ends meet with an engineering job, I wouldn't complain about that, I've realized.
yeah. So I feel like we should do a little introductory bit here for people about the race program that you do have this amazing opportunity to be part of. Because I think we're talking about Katarina Nash now, and she's such a big name that it just struck me that if you like did a survey with a mm-hmm. bunch of young, ambitious young cyclists from pretty much any discipline and said, hey, you can have a mentor.
Yeah.
Probably she would be near the top of the list for a lot of folks' answers. And you're that person. You have Katarina Nash as like a direct mentor, your teammates on the same program. Can you talk a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah. It's been pretty special, I guess, going back to last summer towards like right after nationals. I honestly wasn't even sure if I was going to keep racing bikes.
Mm.
I was like, this has been fun, but this was just like a chapter of my life, like going and racing for a season and like seeing how I felt about it. And there were a lot of parts I loved about it, and there were other parts I joked for like forever that it was my grand retirement after nationals. And I was like, I'm a U23. This was my last year of being a U23. Now I'm elite and I'm done. But Katarina's from Truckee as well. And she was like, let's go take the dogs on a hike. And kind of after that conversation, she presented me with this idea of like kind of creating a little bit of a team dynamic with the two of us. And I was like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, why me? Like, how have I shown you that I deserve this opportunity? But I mean, it's been so special to have her in my corner. And it's been a cool dynamic where she lets me choose my own race schedules, do whatever. Like, she encouraged me to apply for the Lifetime Grand Prix, but was like, hell no, I'm not doing that.
Interesting.
So
what was that conversation like? Because I know I can understand why she doesn't want to do it at this point in her career. I mean, she raced various World Cup series full gas for many, many years. I get why you'd be at a point where you just don't want to dive into that anymore. But how did that conversation go where she encouraged you to do it?
I mean, I think we both saw that the opportunity to be part of it is huge for someone like me who's so fresh. But then she doesn't love the distance stuff. Like, I think her thoughts on Unbound are like, no.
Yeah.
She's like, I'd rather do a short track than something super long. And I finished short tracks and I'm like, oh my gosh, I would have rather raced 100 miles.
I think we're wired
a little different in that way. And I'm like, I don't know if it'll ever change of like me getting better and training that style. But as of right now, I'm an endurance girl for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I know you come from skiing, surfing, you have these other backgrounds. What other sports would you throw in there?
I think I have 8 varsity letters or something.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
I went to a teeny tiny high school.
Okay.
So what I did like, let's see. Soccer was a big one, like all growing up. Mm-hmm. I played on the men's tennis team.
No way.
They didn't have a women's tennis team. Let's see. I swam. I did the snowboard team and the ski team for the school. Cross country, track. I think that's
pretty
it.
Good. What distance did
you
run?
Then I did do NYCA for a year through the high school. Yeah.
Cool. What distance did you run in track?
I did the mile and the 800.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I feel like this is a really weird, like, niche observation, but there are a lot of cyclists that did track, whether in high school or college. And I always think it's an interesting little indicator of kind of physiology and then just also interest.
Yeah. And I was never that good at running.
Oh,
which
really?
Is funny.
Interesting.
Like, I was talking to Alex House about that. He was like, you must have been really fast. And I was like, no, I sucked. And he was like, yeah, I sucked too.
Interesting.
Yeah. So but it is funny then, how like...
Did you feel like you gravitated a little bit more towards cross country versus...
The longer I ran, the better I got.
Yeah. So you already sort of sensed that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then when you... I know that you... Did your first races in 2021, first mountain bike races in 2021, which is pretty wild. Tahoe 100. And well, I guess you said you did NYCA.
So I did a little bit of NYCA.
Okay.
It was the first year of the Northern Nevada League. So it was pretty mellow. It was like just a couple girls.
Yeah.
I was on my like 160 mil trail bike. Like, why can't I keep up with these girls on hardtails? And now it finally all makes sense.
Yeah.
So.
But I guess your first... like real entry point into racing, bike racing, was the Tahoe 100.
Yep.
Which is a pretty hefty first event.
Yeah. I did the thing where you register and I'm like, can I upgrade from the 50 to the 100? And they were like, you're the only one who has ever done this.
But when you finished it, like, what did you think? What did you feel?
I think I still go through the same cycle of like after you finish a really hard race, you're like, I don't want to feel those sensations again. And then you wake up the next day and you're like, that was hard. That was fun.
I know.
So
someone needs to do some crazy social study on that and just tell us why that is.
Yeah.
Because it's such a human thing.
Yeah.
That type two fun. Draw of type two fun. So all that said, I feel like we're somehow totally avoiding the Grand Prix so far, but jumping ahead, I think it is interesting in light of what you just said about gravitating towards the longer stuff that you're going to jump into the Andorra World Cup of all things. Explain that one.
Well, my thing is I'm still so fresh and like figuring out what I want to do and what suits me. And like, so far I've done a little bit of XC stuff, but I was like, I want to go over to Europe and why not go to Andorra and take one of the USAC spots that you can petition for. Mm-hmm. So I'll be starting at the back, but it's more of just like a experience to help guide me of like what's next. I don't know. Yeah.
That's great. Good for you. I don't know that there are a lot of people in your position that would have the bravery to do that.
Yeah.
It's pretty intimidating.
I think it'll be for sure a shock to the system.
Yeah.
But especially
with all the endurance riding you've been doing this year, which I want to talk about. So you're in the Grand Prix, and you've had sort of a rough opening.
Yeah.
Few races, some crashes, mechanicals.
Yep.
As happens. I mean, I feel like it's such a, for whatever, I mean, bike racing in general, but especially this Grand Prix with all of the different style races, I feel like it's such a meat grinder. Like you're either, you know, on the wave, just surfing, it's going smoothly, or you're just in turmoil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the beginning of my season, it wasn't lifetime events, but I felt like I was surfing. Mm-hmm. So then to have the like rude awakening at Sea Otter, I was like, oh, okay, it can't all be sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah. Because did you win Rock Cobbler this year?
Yep.
Yeah. Which is, I remember when that was a fairly like grassrootsy race, and now, you know, it gets a cycling news article.
It was those bowls.
Really, yeah, just, that's yeah. so true. That uh-huh. catapulted uh-huh. it to notoriety.
Everyone was like, what is this?
Oh, yeah. Man. Did someone literally get thrown off their bike by one? Is that what happened?
Yeah, there was like this viral video. And I think like, let's see, last year there was the video and there were a couple other incidents. Mm. And then this year, I think it was just a bunch of angry cows.
Okay.
And, like one of the Legion riders got like pushed off his bike or something.
Whew.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
So anyway, you won that race. Mm-hmm. Very legit field. I'm sure that gave you some confidence for the Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And then it's just sort of been a little bit of everything in terms of setbacks. I know you had a big, big crash and a concussion, I think.
No concussion.
What did you injure again?
I hurt my knee.
That's
like,
right.
That was the most recent one. I got a bloody one, right?
If I remember
I got
correctly.
Like an inch and a half and an inch deep puncture wound.
Yeah, that's
on my
was.
Knee. So it was weird. My quad just like shut off. Like the healing was going really well and like the wound was okay. But that's why I called it on Crusher, because I was like, my leg's just not really working properly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So sitting here now, being really new to the sport, having a lot of people both personally and in the media telling you that you're really talented, mm-hmm. and having Katarina as a mentor, like undoubtedly, I have to assume you're putting some pressure on yourself. It's almost impossible not to, I feel like. How are you dealing with kind of grappling with the like the really challenging stuff that doesn't get talked as much about pro cycling, you know?
I think
we celebrate the big victories and like, oh, someone got injured, mm-hmm. they're gonna come back, of course, everyone comes back from injury, blah, blah, blah. But there's this other side that I feel like doesn't get talked about as much. And I think it's interesting. It'd be interesting to hear your perspective since you're so new to it. Like you haven't practiced going through this process before, really, of disappointment and like clawing your way back. How does it feel right now?
Yeah, I think I've like honestly come full circle and I'm like in a surprisingly good spot right now. Mm. And I'm kind of grateful for having all of the shit go wrong with the Grand Prix.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, in a way it's like, I feel like I need to learn how to deal with adversity before I can actually reach the top and like figure that all out. And it's so easy to look at like Keegan and Sophia and be like, the top is so like you can sit at the top and it's a sustainable place to be. And like you can be so consistent. But then it's such a good reminder that if you like look at Christopher, who was in Rainbow Stripes and like had a hard start to his season, bike racing is hard.
Yeah.
And there's so much that's in your control, but there's also so much that's out of your control. And so, like, my relationship, figuring that out, I feel like I'm so grateful that, like, Unbound, I felt like I was dialed and ready to do super well, and it's out of your control. And, like, to be able to, for me, it's like, for Leadville prep especially, it's like, okay, I did my training well. I have done the little bits and pieces that are in my control, but, like, just the mental strain to think about everything else, I've been able to, like, kind of put that aside, and I think that's new for me, and it's been so fun to, like, ride high country and, like, lean into the things of, like, why I like riding my bike. And I've gone through, like, a weird relationship with racing of, like, oh, racing's just, like, the thing that has to get done, and I love the training, but I think I'm finally at a point of, like, oh, the racing is fun to challenge myself. And if it doesn't go right, like, I'm 23 years old and can have another day. And you were, like, saying climbing back to the top after an injury or, like, getting back on track, that doesn't have to mean necessarily this season. Like, I have other opportunities, and it's my first Leadville and, like, first year kind of pushing myself. And yeah, I mean, you look at Katarina, and she's 45, and she set the downhill record at Downeyville. Yeah. And, like, she's a lot older, and I got a lot of time. And I think, like, all of those lessons have been so, so helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm curious, too, about, and I almost hesitate to bring him up because I know you've made, and rightfully so, really, it feels like you've told people you want to cultivate your own relationship with the bike and not have your partner, Chris, be this, like, you know, oh, you know, she's dating Chris, because he's automatically, some people are going to do that because he's so successful. Yeah. But I think it's really cool that you've sort of put your foot down and be like, I'm going on my own journey. Yes, of course, I can learn things from him, but he's not going to, like, hold my hand or guide my experience. That said, what is it? I hope this isn't too personal a question, but what has it been like for both of y'all to have this rough period at the same time? Because, like, he's obviously been doing it longer. I have Nicole. Like, she's such an amazing voice of reason because she's not, like, super close to the racing and, like, in it. Mm-hmm. She has perspective because she's outside of it. And I think that's of a big benefit to me. But I also have to assume there's huge benefit of having a partner that's going through a lot of the same things, too, and can just really, really relate. Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I would say the reason I'm here right now is because of him. And, like, we've been together for 3 years. And at the beginning of us hanging out, I was like, hell no, I don't want to be a bike racer. Like, I don't want to go through the things that you're going through.
Oh,
like,
interesting. So you some of it already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I gradually warmed up to the idea of racing. But it's been a fun journey of, like, us both growing so much and growing separately, but also, like, together with our relationship to the bike. And I would say he has been in the sport for so long that he knows how to, like, gracefully navigate all of the ups and downs. And I think that's a huge thing that I've taken from our relationship. And just how he's been a pro bike racer for so long, but, like, there is still novelty there, and, like, he makes it fun, and, like, going on high country rides and everything is, like, still so special to him. I have, like, still so much more to learn too, but, like, as far as the perfect person to kind of be in my corner, it's been so special. Of course, I have, like, such a head start with him, Katarina, just like the entire bike community on my side. So, I mean, it's for sure a huge advantage.
Yeah, yeah. 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 And speaking of communities and support systems and everything, you mentioned earlier how much you've enjoyed having other really strong ladies to train with this week here in Durango. You've kind of been in this sweet pod with Sarah Sturm and Ellen Campbell and Kaylee Blevins. And it sounded like, was it today that you had an interval workout with them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just that's a totally new experience.
Yeah, it's, like, so, so brand new. It's pretty special.
So what is that like? What is it when you say you go out and do a workout together? Can you explain a little bit of what that dynamic is like?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think just going back to like Christopher and my relationship, like I think I got so fast because I was just hanging onto his wheel during endurance rides. And so I'm so used to like sucking it up and being like, I'm dying, but I'm okay. And like, he's literally just chilling. So it's so, so different to be with girls who push you, and like the camaraderie is so, so cool, but also to be in a relatable position versus just hanging out with like fast guys. Mm-hmm. So like we had a little like sprint workout, and like our times were offset just by like 15 seconds or something. So like one girl goes up the road, then another one, and like you're cheering each other on the whole time. And it's just cool to, I don't know, be in that environment. That's like, I guess it's just a special feeling when you don't, when it's not a competitive thing at all too.
Yeah,
definitely makes me want to just stick around and hang out with all these girls. I'm like, oh, I need this once I go back home.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can find a little bit of it in Santa Cruz. Yeah. I know you guys just found a place there, and you're going to be settling in there. Can you talk a little bit about why Santa Cruz? And I mean, I know surfing is an important part of your life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just talk a little bit about what you're looking forward to in regards to that.
Yeah, I think Santa Cruz kind of checks all the boxes of like good riding. I actually interned there last year, and I have a job lined up, so that was super nice. And then for Christopher, Specialized is right there, so it kind of totally makes sense of like really, really good training, good community automatically. And then yeah, of course the surfing is a really exciting benefit.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we're like 3 blocks away from Pleasure Point. So I'm really looking forward to like morning surfs to just get the day started.
Yeah, we love that area too, for sure. Cool. Okay, we're already at 24 minutes. These things fly by. But the last thing I'm curious about is what you're feeling about Grand Prix 2024 at this point. And it's totally fine if you're not sure yet, because obviously you're feelings on things and interests are evolving really quickly at this point. Who knows, maybe you go to Andorra and you're like, this was the best thing ever, I'm going World Cup.
You never know.
But are you, despite all the bad luck to start your Grand Prix experience, what are your thoughts at this? I mean, we're also 3 of 7 rounds in. Like,
it's crazy.
It's so insane. It's such,
because I'm so curious how I'm gonna feel come Big Sugar, of like fired up for next season or like
dead
this.
For sure. So is the answer you just don't know at this point?
I think I want to lean more into mountain biking stuff. Like, that for sure makes me the happiest, is being on single track. But then of course after Unbound not going well, I was like, uh-oh, this is unfinished business. Like, I have to come back to some of these races and figure it out. And there's so many exciting new races too, that it's like, I have so many options, which is pretty special. Yeah. But of course, like, I do want to go back to the Unbound. The Leadville is exciting, even though I haven't been yet. So I don't know. So many question marks, and I'm honestly not really in a rush to figure it out, which is pretty, pretty nice.
Yeah. For sure. I should have shouted out the fact that you, Were you second or third at Downeyville overall?
I was third overall, second in the downhill.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. The old mentor gotcha.
Mm-hmm. By a lot of time. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, there was so much time I need to make up.
Yeah. She's done it a couple times.
Just a couple times.
And are you going to do the that Little Sugar mountain bike race the weekend before Big Sugar?
That's the plan. Right on. How about you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
The prize purse is quite exciting.
It is. And I also just love the style of racing there, because it's very different than the kind of Intermountain West stuff we typically get. It's fun and dynamic and rocky. And it's also going to be long. It's really hard.
Is it 100K?
100K. Okay. Yeah. And so when it was an Epic Rides race, it was a 50 miler. And it would, like, people were more dead or as dead after it as compared to like the Whiskey Off-Road or something, because it's just, it has as much climbing, but the longest climb's like 3 minutes.
Yeah. So super punchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those trails are so fun.
They are.
Yeah. And it's just, like, so different, because it's like so built.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah. Well, yeah. The cool thing too is it's enough mileage that we get out into the back stuff that's more natural.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some really sweet like slabby rock stuff. And
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it'll be sweet. And it's just fun to hang out in Bentonville for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Big bike reunion. Cool. Thanks, Anna.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Catch you next time. Hello again, everyone. Thank you so much for listening today. Hope you enjoyed that episode. I want to say a big thank you to Off-Piste Provisions for supporting today's episode. As I said at the top of the show, they're a New Zealand brand that's on a journey to create a thriving planet for all. They make plant-based adventure snacks made with all the good stuff and packed with protein. They're vegan, soy-free, gluten-free, and they have 45% protein, a great source of iron. I definitely was skeptical at first. I've loved beef jerky my whole life. And I was really suspicious that a plant-based alternative could be as tasty, but it is. I love it. They have 3 flavors, original, sweet and hot, and teriyaki. And you can get 30% off when you use code all caps adventure30 at checkout on Amazon. I also want to give a shout out to Durango Derby. They're not supporting today's episode, but I love Durango and I love bike racing, and there's a new bike race coming to Durango. I've played a role in making this one happen, actually. And it's September 23rd. It is a mountain bike race, cross-country race. Awesome trails. Durango has the best, most diverse trail riding from a town center that I've ever found. We have an incredible community. The first ever Mountain Bike World Championships were held here in 1990. It's going to be a blast. Hope to see you there. I gave way more details at the top of the show, so if you missed it, you can go back and listen there. But there'll be something for everyone. You can race it as a team. 2-person team, 4-person team. Sturm and I will be leading some group rides during the weekend. And we'd love to see you there. DurangoDerby.com. Lastly, I want to say a big thank you to Lily McKelvin for editing and producing the show each and every week. And we will catch you next week.